As I was getting ready to start this show, I was in a pretty good mood, putting the last bits and pieces of my notes together, getting the microphone plugged in, and then I realized this is the first episode of the show we've done since the Denver Broncos won the Super Bowl, so now I think we need to have a quick moment of silence. And I think that's the last time I'm going to talk about it, actually. Welcome to Referee the Kicker, a Chiefs podcast. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe. You can always get to me on Twitter at JBBriscoe, B-R-I-S-C-O, patreon.com/RTK to support the show. And on this episode, yes, a mid-February off-season episode about the Kansas City Chiefs. We're going to talk about cap space, free agent wide receivers, early mock drafts. They're starting already because there's always news in the NFL and for the Chiefs. Also, we'll get some franchise tag options for the Chiefs going forward. Maybe even some pie-in-the-sky trade opportunities. Maybe an extension is on the horizon. Not for a player you would expect, but for either Alex Smith or for a much-maligned first-round pick for the Kansas City Chiefs. All that and much, much more here on this episode of Roughing the Kicker. Mock drafts always begin too early. And I think we always put a little bit too much of an emphasis on them, especially in February. But I'm going to start there today because I think there's an interesting trend that's perked up in these early goings of these mock drafts. SB Nation put together 30 different mock drafts and then made a little pie chart for each team, the most common players that were picked. I'll roll through those, but then we'll look at the overall trend here that I think might have some merit that I wasn't expecting. So first off, here's just a list from most common pick to least common pick for the Chiefs in these drafts. Louisville defensive tackle Sheldon Rankins, Baylor wide receiver Corey Coleman, Notre Dame linebacker Jalen Smith, Michigan State offensive tackle Jake Conklin, Alabama defensive tackle Jerron Reed, Florida defensive end Jonathan Bullard, Kansas State offensive lineman Cody Whitehair, Ohio State safety Von Bell, Indiana offensive tackle Jason Spriggs, Clemson defensive end Kevin Dodd, and Baylor defensive tackle Andrew Billings. Now, in that list is a lot of names that will not be there, and there are names in that list that won't get picked in the first round, or probably one or two of those guys, probably more than that because it's February, won't get picked in the second round. And this points to two things that I want to make sure everyone recognizes at this point in the process. Not only is it February, which means stuff is going to change all the time. Imagine how much changed during the combines. Dontari Poe wouldn't have been. I think he was a third or fourth round pick before the combines in most mock drafts. I could be making that up. But the combine changes a lot of things. Analysis, although maybe it shouldn't, from here to the draft changes a lot of things because all of these guys have already played their last game of college football. But I digress for that point. The other thing that I think is really important here is one of those guys is going to go in the top 10. And somebody's going to go in the third round because the Chiefs are picking 28th this year, which is a good problem, but it's something that we haven't had to deal with in a long time. So it's not like years where the one that stands out to me even more so than Eric Fisher's year, the Chiefs at the first overall pick, was when the Chiefs picked fifth and took Eric Berry. You could put together a list of your six favorite players, and every fan could do that. Your top six choices. And then, or even the Tyson Jackson year, the Chiefs picked third. But Eric Berry year, at least for me, was the happy version of that. Put together your six favorite players, cross your fingers, hope Berry falls, or hope that Scott Pioli isn't afraid of taking a safety with a fifth overall pick. And you can kind of play that game, watch guys rise and fall, really follow the Chiefs' needs. Do the Chiefs draft for need? Do they take the best player available? It's really hard to do that at 28 because so much can happen in front of you, and so much will happen, obviously, but ready for the obvious thing. 27 players are going to go ahead of the Chiefs unless they trade up. But more importantly, those guys could be anybody. If I had to bet right now, and again, this is from 30 different mock drafts. If I had to bet right now, I'd say none of these guys are Chiefs and because it's February and they picked 28th. However, here's what I think we can do reasonably, intelligently at this point in the process. It is look at the positions that we think the Chiefs need. Look at the positions that people think might be deep in the draft at this point, and see what the quote-unquote experts are starting to do. Of those drafts, 26% of them have the Chiefs going defensive tackle, which I could argue defensive tackle has been the team's deepest position in 2015, or was the team's deepest position in 2015. With Dontari Poe and Jay Howard, that defensive tackle spot was top-notch and deep. I mean, there were not a better combination of nose tackles in football this year. Simply not plausible, because they're both top 10. But the Chiefs going defensive tackle in the first round makes sense when you look at John Dorsey's record with first-rounders in the past, at least with the Chiefs, when he's been the one making the calls. John Dorsey has this trend of taking a rookie 1 year before planning on letting a veteran walk. Eric Fisher drafted him next year. Brandon Albert left. Dee Ford was drafted as Tom Bahali and Justin Houston's contracts are going to be up after that. Both of them obviously stuck around. I think that's an exception. The plan seemed to still be there. Marcus Peters was drafted last year. This offseason, we're talking about Sean Smith. Will he stay? Will he go? Will they pay him or not? Same process. Now, defensive tackle, you take one of those guys, or you take a defensive tackle, you let Jay Howard walk right now, then this year, you go with Dontari Poe and the rookie, which is going to be a very cheap, a very cheap nose tackle rotation right there, if that happens. So you let Howard walk, save some money, Poe and rookie in the middle, then you let Poe go after next season. If that plays out, that would be a fantastic transition, because unlike corner or pass rusher, you don't need, or even tackle, you don't need to have two really top-notch players at this position. You can get away with a dominant force and a good substitute. In this case, though, Dontari Poe and Jay Howard were both pretty dominant, although I think Jay Howard had the better season this year than Dontari Poe did. But if the rookie can take over as a number one, like as a real legitimate NFL starting nose tackle, even though injuries play such a huge factor, if that can happen, which is unlikely, or even if not unlikely, not a great bet. But if that happens, that cap number stays so low there, and you continue getting production. However, I wouldn't gamble on that. I think you've got to pay Jay Howard or Dontari Poe. And if you do that, you're saying this first-round pick's probably not going to see the field as a starter for a couple of years. Maybe, I mean, if you give an extension to Poe or Howard, 3 or 4 or 5 years, probably 3 or 4 years. Unless there's an injury, which in that case, you're in trouble anyway because you do have a lot of money sitting on the injury report. So with the Baltimore Ravens this year, it doesn't matter how good the top of your roster is. If the injuries happen, depth is important, but you can't win with all backups. Although the Broncos did that on offense way more than I would have expected. That trend is there for John Dorsey. I don't think we're going to see Dontari Poe and Jay Howard on this team for very long, which throws me into this totally pie-in-the-sky, probably baseless February speculation kind of deal, because the NFL, the NBA trade deadline is coming up. The NFL does not value established players very highly. However, Dontari Poe is young and big and impactful. If the Chiefs could get value for Dontari Poe, I would trade him away in a heartbeat, sign Jay Howard, and then you'd start to bring in your guy to help Jay Howard in the rotation. The problem is that the Chiefs are not going to get Dontari Poe value for Dontari Poe. You could try to trade him for a second-round pick. And look at what the Chiefs did with their last second-round pick. They got Mitch Morse, who is going to be this team's starting center for as long as he's around, it seems. But is that better than Dontari Poe? On the face of it, no. With a salary cap involved, potentially, because of how the Chiefs have to spend their money, this isn't fantasy football. And I think most of us get that. You can't just keep the players who are performing the best. You have to factor in the cap situation and how that impacts the team, how that impacts how you build the roster, how that impacts where you spend your money. It's why teams like the Seahawks with rookie contract Russell Wilson are so hard to beat, because if you get production cheaply, that's why Marcus Peters is so valuable right now. If you get production cheaply from a player at a expensive place, why you've got to go cheap somewhere. That's the most powerful thing in the economics of a roster, getting production cheaply somewhere. Because in the NFL, you're going to have to spend money on certain positions. I'd argue pass rushing, you've got to spend your money there, and you've got to have playmakers, even though those can be found more cheaply, especially at running back. You've got to have playmakers on both sides of the ball. Pay those, but then you've got to cut corners somewhere. And as far as the draft strategy goes, I think John Dorsey is as aware of that as anybody in football. Also, before I move on to the next topic, which is very similar to the previous topic, if you don't like the fact that I'm spending a lot of time talking about the Chiefs cap situation and how the money works, I apologize. I'd rather talk about real games also, believe me. But at this point in the offseason, those are the conversations that are weighing most heavily on the team and on fan bases as well. If you have other stories that you think I ought to be talking about, I ought to be looking into, you can Facebook message me on Facebook at RTK Show, or facebook.com/RTK Show, or on Twitter at JB Briscoe, or you can post things on the Facebook at facebook.com/RTK Show. Any of those places are a good way to get a hold of me and give me stories that I might have missed throughout the course of a week. Now let's get back to talking money. Over again on Arrowhead Pride, Joel Thurman has an article talking about how the Chiefs can create more salary cap space with some tough decisions. A couple of these, one of them I've talked about already. I don't remember if I talked about it last show or just off the show on Twitter and in real life. But this one is my favorite that I think freaks people out. An Eric Fisher extension. Thurman writes, "We equate extension with a really good player, and Fisher seems to be merely league average. However, Fisher's due $7 million this year, and his fifth-year option, if the Chiefs pick it up, would be more than $10 million in 2017. The Chiefs can give him a small extension with similar money, but structured in such a way, bonus up front, that helps the cap this year." This should absolutely happen. And I think, and again, I said last preseason, I said this year was going to be a big step up for Eric Fisher. He was injured early on, had a ton of unfair criticism about his injury playing Houston in week one. Drove me insane. Got put over to the right side, which did not work. But once he got back to the left side and settled in, the Chiefs lost one game, which was in New England. It was the only game the Chiefs lost with Eric Fisher at left tackle. Not that he single-handedly won those games or anything, obviously. But he played very, very well through that entire stretch. I will not be told otherwise. And he stabilized the offensive line in a way that only one other player did for this team, Jeff Allen. Jeff Allen and Eric Fisher got together and stabilized the left side of this offensive line, which had a domino effect on the entire offensive line, which had an effect on the entire offense, which had an effect on the entire team. I'm happy to have Eric Fisher be the Chiefs' left tackle for the next three seasons. Give him a deal that keeps him here locked up for the next 3 years. Give him those $7 million-ish per year. 3 years, $21 million. If he'll do that, maybe it needs to be 24 with escalators in it. 3 years, 24, 25. Structure it in a way that benefits the team. Gives him some of that money up front. Give him bonuses, workout bonuses, incentives. Build Eric Fisher's contract how you need to, but offer him now this chance for guaranteed money over the next 3 or 4 or 5 seasons. He's going in the right direction. His arrow is pointed up right now, and where he currently is an above-average left tackle. And being a left tackle is hard, and it's important. And Eric Fisher stood up against everybody he went up against when he was at left tackle this season. I know J.J. Watt had the injury issues in the playoff game against Houston, but no one was saying that the week before. In week 17, J.J. Watt went nuts in the wild card round of the playoff game. Eric Fisher whipped J.J. Watt. Not that I'm going to pick Eric Fisher in that matchup every single time, but he's still underrated. And paying him while he's still underrated benefits the team now and in the future, both in cap money and in locking down your left tackle. Pay Eric Fisher. The next on the list here, cut Jamal Charles. Now, Thurman writes, "For the first time in a long time, this is a real question. The Chiefs recently reiterated that he's a Chief, so I expect him to stay in Kansas City next season. But cutting Jamal would save $5.3 million against the cap with no dead money." That's the key here. I don't want to see Jamal Charles go, but Spencer Ware and Charkendrick West both played it very well. Not Jamal Charles well, and I think Alex Smith and Andy Reid figured out some stuff with the offense. It wasn't a matter of Jamal Charles slowing down the offense, but they didn't have to do some of the things that they did after he was hurt, if that makes any sense at all. They had to get more creative, they had to do things better, and they did in the absence of Jamal Charles. Not because Charles was gone, but because they had to without him. Jamal Charles covers up a lot of ills on an offense, and that cover-up went away. That makeup for the offense went away, so they had to get prettier. I think that makes sense. Bring back Jamal Charles with this same new and improved mindset, I think would benefit the offense greatly. And if you bring back the three-man rotation of Charles, West, and Ware, all three of those guys are going to get more touches. Well, Charles will obviously get the most touches, but Charles will have fewer touches than he's had to have in years past. If I had to make a prediction for the Chiefs to here, I'd say they sit down with Charles in the offseason and say, "Listen, here's where we're at. Currently, what we think is holding us back from a Super Bowl is the cap space to make three moves that we can't make right now. And right now, you know, we all know you're due to make $5 million, and none of that it would be dead money if we just cut you right now. So what we need to do is we need to shave off a little bit of that. We need to make some of it maybe we pay you down the road some. Maybe we do some incentives." I think incentives are going to happen. We've got to work together here, Jamal, to get your cap number down. We'll pay you as much as we can. We'll pay you as close to this number as we can. But we've got to get your cap number down here. You're a running back. Running backs are becoming more and more disposable. Weston Ware played very, very well. We want you here, but we've got to create some space, and your contract is very easy to work with. Coming off a couple of injuries, that is a bloody thing, a bloody conversation to have, and it sucks as a Chiefs fan to even talk that way because of how good Charles has been, and I think still will be, even with the injury past. But that's a place something will happen with Jamal Charles' contract. I hope it's not as drastic as cutting him. Thurman also then goes into a guy we were just talking about, goes into Dontari Poe's contract. Last week I talked about, or 2 weeks ago I talked about Jay Howard and Dontari Poe. Today we talked about drafting a defensive tackle, how that seems to be kind of the pick of the hour for Chiefs mock drafts. Thurman points this out. Poe's fifth-year option is hitting this season for approximately $6.2 million. The Chiefs could extend Poe and get a little more space, but it's not enough for the Chiefs to rush an extension with him. The Chiefs have some time. And they do. The extension would make sense because then they could let Jay Howard walk, feel good about Dontari Poe long-term. But right now, if I were to pick one guy in a vacuum, I might take Jay Howard. That's why I brought up that idea of even a trade. But I don't know if the Chiefs have the luxury of being able to pay Poe for this year, this fifth-year option, and then also sign Jay Howard. I'm not convinced that math is going to work out, but I hope it does. Because at this point, I'd say extend Howard, try to just roll with Poe, and then you'll get a compensatory pick in 2018, I suppose, after Poe leaves. Actually, it might be 27. I'm not sure. A compensatory pick when Poe goes and gets a pretty big contract in Atlanta or something. And then here's a phrase that I haven't seen in a very long time. Cut Dustin Colquitt. Thurman writes, the Chiefs can save $2.8 million by cutting Colquitt with a $1.6 million space in cap money, in dead cap money. Is it worth it? I would say no. And Thurman says the same thing. But this is something that I guess has been thrown around. You save $1.2 million. You get rid of a very good punter, one of the five best in football. But where I sort of slide this one off to the side is when you look back at how important field position was for the Chiefs this season, especially kind of early on in that winning streak, pinning other teams back and then letting the defense be aggressive and then giving the offense good field position again was hugely, hugely, hugely important in something like the first 6 to 8 games of the winning streak. I think I'll go ahead and let Dustin Colquitt keep that $1.2 million because then what the Chiefs are doing to break even would have to sign another punter for $1.2 million that would be certainly worse than Dustin Colquitt. I'll pass on that one. They all have some merit, though, I would say. Now for something completely different. Money. The Kansas City Chiefs and the franchise tag. The NFL franchise tag is always something that I feel like every fan base talks about every year. Rarely actually gets used, and when it does get used, it usually ends up in a long-term deal anyway. But Arrowhead probably put together some numbers for what the numbers would be for Sean Smith, Jay Howard, and Eric Berry, each of them prime franchise tag candidates for the Chiefs this year. These are the estimated costs that ESPN is estimating, I suppose. Let's start from the bottom as far as money goes. Safety Eric Berry. A lot of people I talked about, if you want to hear more about Eric Berry and my thoughts on him, go back to the last episode of the show, either on iTunes, on Arrowhead Addict, wherever, Podomatic. I am not as fully on board the Eric Berry long-term train as a lot of people are. I know he's the heart and soul of this team, and I don't want to discount that because I believe in that on some level. I believe in the importance of actually having a team unit, and I know that Eric Berry is a huge part of this Chiefs team. But if you step out from that at all, I think you start to see Berry take a real step down in his value. Not just because he struggles in pass defense, which is the number one priority for safeties in general. His strength is in the run game, and he's improved at that. He improved that last year, but I still see a lot of those same weaknesses in his game. And if you look at what he does well, what he struggles at, and then you look at what else the Chiefs have, a long-term deal for Ron Parker, Hussein Abdullah and Tyvon Branch, both of them still currently, you know, right around the team, so re-signing them would be easier than bringing in another outside guy, knows the system and everything, obviously. Both of them played quite well whenever they were around. But at the same time, I have such a hard time seeing the Chiefs not even getting a long-term deal done with Eric Berry. I don't want to see Berry get almost $11 million all straight up against the cap this year. I that will that will damage the Chiefs' spending ability in a big way for a guy who I think is a little bit expendable because of his cap number or what it would be. I'm feeling like the Chiefs are going to have a long-term deal with Eric Berry done, and people are going to be thrilled about it. I won't be in that camp. I love Eric Berry. The story is incredible, and I like some of the plays he makes are fantastic. But as an all-around player, some of his deficiencies are like kind of the point of being a safety. So, I it's such a hard place to be as a Chiefs fan because I love Eric Berry. I do. But I don't even mean to say that he's not a Pro Bowl caliber player, because he is. But looking at the other safeties that get paid in this class and what their Chiefs are getting from Ron Parker for much less, I struggle to rationalize an $11 million franchise tag value or a long-term deal value that gets in that same camp. Next up the list, Jay Howard at $13.4 million. Howard would interest me very much as a franchise guy, because the Chiefs are playing with him and Dontari Poe. Poe has 1 year left on his deal. And maybe this is why the Chiefs point to a defensive lineman in the draft, not only in the middle, but because Howard has a little bit of flexibility. He can go out to the sides. Mike DeVito's hitting free agency. The Chiefs have some questions in that front line. And if the Chiefs think that Jay Howard and Dontari Poe can play side by side more this year, along with Alan Bailey, I think that'd be a heck of a turnaround. Howard's surge to relevance happened mostly in the middle because of the time when Dontari Poe was injured. But they rotated. They're both in the field some. If the Chiefs see Howard as being a flexible piece of this line, I would prioritize his long-term deal, I think, even over Eric Berry's at this point, which I know is sacrilegious. Then the most expensive, and in my mind, the most useful franchise tag, Sean Smith, just under $15 million. This is the one where I know it's $15 million. I understand. But I think Sean Smith is a hugely important part of this team. Marcus Peters, cheap and fantastic. Young, first-round pick, Pro Bowler. Love Marcus Peters. All on the same page there? Great. Next, Philip Gaines. Looked like he was going to be the guy to take over the Sean Smith spot. Opposite of Marcus Peters. But Gaines got hurt, tore his ACL, got put on injured reserve. Never even was on the field at the same time as Sean Smith. Or he might have been... No, I think he got hurt in Game 3. And Smith was suspended for 3 games. Gaines is not an outside corner naturally. He played a lot of slot the year as a rookie. And the Chiefs drafted Steven Nelson last year to play the slot to move Gaines out to the outside, in my opinion. They expected their secondary this year to go Peters outside, Gaines outside, Nelson inside. But Nelson did not look very good for most of this season. Didn't get a whole lot of playing time. Give him another year to grow. Keep Gaines in the slot. Or if you want to try to work Gaines into the outside, fine. You build a little injury cushion. Keep Peters and Smith on the edges. That secondary is hard to beat. That secondary gets better because Gaines comes back. Another year of game reps for Steven Nelson. I want to see those corners stay how they were, even at such a huge price tag. I would even be game to give Smith maybe a 3-year contract and just lock down those corners. But he's going to demand so much money or a cheaper long-term deal. And I don't think the Chiefs are going to go either of those directions. But to lock in one more year of Sean Smith, then after this next season, I even think the Chiefs would draft another cornerback in the first 3 rounds. Again, this year, a big physical, maybe a raw corner who fits the Sean Smith mold. And then in 2017, Smith goes, the young guy steps in. Gaines could even stay at the slot then, or the young guy could be another slot guy. Gaines moves to the outside. There's a lot of options for shifting that around, but I would like to see Sean Smith. I'd like to see him get the tag, even though, or if they could get a 2-year deal done for slightly less money. I don't see it happening. I think the best chance for Sean Smith to stay right now is the franchise tag. I think Eric Berry gets a long-term deal, which means right now I think Jay Howard is either walking or getting a deal that I haven't done the math on yet, but would be... It'd be a lot of money on the defensive side of the football, which I'm completely okay with. I said I wasn't going to mention this again, but the Denver Broncos just won the Super Bowl with a bad quarterback. With a bad quarterback who could not use his 2 expensive receivers and a pretty average running game. That defense was dynamic, and they're going to have to pay a lot of pieces of that defense, and it's going to be good again. The Chiefs put a lot of money in Justin Houston. They put draft picks into Dee Ford and Marcus Peters. A lot of money, a draft pick into Dontari Poe. might have a lot of money in Jay Howard, a lot of money in Eric Berry and Ron Parker, a lot of money in Sean Smith. And that all sounds well and good until you realize, well, where is that money not going? Sign Jeremy Maclin. That's whenever you have instances of letting Jeff Allen go, letting Jamal Charles go, trying to rework Alex Smith's contract. Maybe you keep him around for 2 or 3 years for the sake of creating some more cap space and hurting yourself down the road. That's why the NFL's cap situation is such a puzzle piece, or is such a puzzle with all these different pieces, because they're different sizes and you can move them down years in advance. It's a time traveling puzzle, which might be the worst analogy I've ever heard. For this last big topic on today's show, I want to go to the comment section on Arrowhead Addict from the last show. If you follow the show on Arrowhead Addict's website, as the shows get posted, I post them every time I tweet the links out, and I post it on Facebook. Get involved in the comment sections there. I'm going to pull from them especially a lot in the off season. Starting off this with a comment from Donald B. Said, I'm surprised you didn't say anything about Alex Smith's contract. Could lower the cap it for this year, and I know it's not a popular choice, but it has us tied to him through the 2017 season. It could free up somewhere in the $10 million range and have that used on all of our free agents, especially when this is going to be our best chance to make a run for the title. Response from The Stew. If I were Alex, I would only do it if the Chiefs come with a specific player and planned in mind to get me to the Super Bowl. I would need a guarantee in writing if we didn't get said player that my salary goes back. Alex's contract is reasonable and currently 13th next year. To your point, Brady is 19 because he told the Patriots how to use the money otherwise reserved for him. To Smith's defense, I think he took a fair contract and could have gotten more, 19 in total guaranteed money. I think I at least teased talking about Alex Smith's contract in future shows, because that's a conversation that I've had at 810, the 810 WHB where I work. I've had it among other Chiefs fans, and I've thought about it. I've written about it. I must have not brought it up on the show yet, so I'll do that now. Extending Alex Smith's contract in the same way we talked about doing it for why it would work for Eric Fisher, it would work for Alex Smith. Instead of paying Alex Smith all this money this year and then having his contract fall off the books, which, by the way, just to refresh everyone's memory, in week 6, we were talking about Chase Daniel getting playing time and being so upset that Alex Smith would have to be the quarterback through the 2016 season because of his contract situation and how the Chiefs could not get out of his deal this year. The one way they can lessen that money is by extending him, which we were certainly not entertaining that idea at the time. Now we are, and now we should be. This offense has been built around Alex Smith in a good way. We're seeing what Alex Smith can do. It's grown as we've gone. Give Alex Smith just one more year of essentially a guaranteed contract. Overall, boost the money a little bit, but lessen the money year to year. Guarantees him for next year. So 16 and 17, Alex Smith is the quarterback. You do that, you free up money this year. The part where, so I agree with what Donald said across the board. Where I disagree with The Stew is the specific in writing aspect of it, because I don't know who Alex Smith would be asking for. For Alex Smith, you would say, well, what he needs is receivers, not an offensive line. And I can see that. I think that would be the best for Alex Smith. But the best thing for the team, as I just talked about, all those guys we just discussed on the defensive side of the ball. So I'm inclined to say that Alex Smith's money that would be freed up by this deal that may or may not happen. I would say that it would need to bulk up the defense, because I think Alex Smith's offense has a ceiling. And that ceiling is higher than we used to think it was. In fact, it could even be elevating even more. But with Charles and Weston Ware and Maclin, year two of Chris Conley, Albert Wilson, maybe another option outside, Travis Kelce, as long as that offensive line holds up, by the way, pay Jeff Allen, it's worth it. As long as the O-line holds up, I think that offense just about maximizes what Smith can do. As long as Conley can get on the field and demand some respect across from Jeremy Maclin next year, which I think he actually will. And I already said Eric Fisher. Pay Eric Fisher, pay Jeff Allen. Hope to God that Chris Conley steps into the shoes that he needs to be able to fill this next in his second season. Trust Jeremy Maclin and Travis Kelce. I think this offense is just about as far as it can get upwards. Although it was better in the first half of games since the Steelers game, which is when Andy Reid was calling plays. And then Doug Peterson called in the second half. Second halves were worse. The offensive coordinators might be able to get even a little bit more out of it. We'll see. But more or less, I think this is about as good as the Chiefs offense is going to get, which is pretty good. Especially, I mean, think of the first half of games and that winning streak. It's a pretty good offense. and you're bringing back Jamaal Charles and a second year of Chris Conley. And beyond that, the wide receiver options are limited, to say the least. Here are the top receivers on SpotTrack.com, just listing free agent wide receivers this offseason. Anquan Boldin, Malcolm Floyd, Percy Harvin, Rod Streeter, Jermaine Kearse, Jericho Cotchery, Brian Quick, Mohamed Sanu, Andre Caldwell, Alshon Jeffrey. He's not coming, sorry. Reuben Randall, Travis Benjamin, Jordan Nord, Marvin Jones. I mean, stop me when you hear it. Jason Devant, Darius Heyward-Bey, Ricardo Lockett. Stop me there, with the exception of Alshon Jeffrey, when you hear a name that you would want in Kansas City badly, or a name at all, a name that would make sense here as far as the cap situation, the offense, etc. There was some talk about Riley Cooper becoming a Chief because of his time with Andy Reid. I was looking for ex-Reid receivers whenever I came across the fact that Riley Cooper is going to be available. Riley Cooper's not good enough for that to work. I would love the idea of like Andy Reid's number three receiver who, you know, had some peaks with Reid but kind of slid off a little bit with Chip Kelly. Riley Cooper's not good enough for that to happen. Now, if you want to bring in the veteran across from Macklin and not a strictly slot guy because Albert Wilson is around, Boldin, Malcolm Floyd, Percy Harvin. Percy Harvin is a train wreck, and the Chiefs have DeAnthony Thomas, so let's not talk about Percy Harvin. I do think DeAnthony Thomas is coming back, by the way. But Malcolm Floyd, Anquan Boldin. Bolden's 35, Floyd is 34, which I didn't even know. I would have guessed younger for Malcolm Floyd. Those are the kind of guys you're talking about. And those are guys coming into Andy Reid's system who have not been a part of Andy Reid's system. And I don't like that. I don't like how that's... I mean, the Chiefs took the smartest receiver they could find last year in the draft in Chris Conley, and he was never a part of this offensive system until late in the season. The learning curve for Andy Reid offenses seem to be too high. Wilson has to improve. Conley has to improve. I would love to bring in another option, but unless it's someone else who's just who is familiar with the West Coast offense, aside from Andy Reid, then maybe that's your next best bet. But it's not a very bright future for the receiving group there. As far as Alex Smith goes, I'm on board with extending him with Eric Fisher. The questionable stuff to me is Dontari Poe, his extension, Jay Howard, Sean Smith, and Eric Berry, obviously. Overall, though, you can solve a lot of those problems if you do extend Fisher and Smith and spread that money out a little bit. Pay Jeff Allen. Pay, in my priority, Sean Smith. If you could give him a 2-year contract, I would freak out. I would love that deal. But the Chiefs are playing with a lot of elements here. And they're not going to resolve most of those in the draft. And if they do, it will be the defensive side of the ball because of what I just said about Andy Reid. Andy Reid's offense is a hard one to pick up. I talked to Mark Boerichter towards the end of the season and asked him about Andy Reid's system and what we can expect from receivers joining it. And he just rattled off a play title, a West Coast offensive play title. And my head was spinning. And it's like that for rookie receivers, for free agents entering the system, even veteran smart ones like Anquan Boldin. Although he has some experience with the West Coast, I think. You're not going to be able to solve the passing game problems with rookies. Chris Conley was the best chance to have that happen, and it didn't happen. It might work in the second year. In fact, I think it will. I think Chris Conley is going to be a good receiver for this team. I think he'll be the number 2 receiver next year by a pretty good margin. And if he's not, we have problems in Kansas City. But defensively, look at what guys can do. Now, Dontari Poe and D. Ford, neither of them had enormous years as a rookie. But what Marcus Peters did this year makes you go, hey, listen, you bring in a smart, talented, underrated, because of some off-the-field stuff, corner into this system, give that to Bob Sutton and see what happens. I can see the Chiefs taking a gamble there. As much as I'm nervous about Philip Gaines and letting Sean Smith walk, I said early on, right after the Chiefs lost in the playoff game, we had our first, on 8-10, we had our first mock draft, who do you think they got discussion, which lasted like all of 15 seconds. I said, hey, let's see, right now I'll say corner. So the Chiefs go corner again, because I think they let Sean Smith walk, and I think they will not go into next year with nothing but Philip Gaines and Steven Nelson and Ron Parker playing some slot stuff. But boy, I hope they keep Sean Smith. I almost straight up forgot to do one of the most important things I do on this show, which is to thank the people who make this show actually happen. Randy Singh, at Randy_Singh_, Don Beal at DonBeal32, Andy Simpson, Stephen Smith, Derek Vaughn at D_Vaughn88, Christine Roadlander at C Roadlander, Ty Declare at Ty Declare44, Josh Beadle. These are the people who support this show financially, most of them through Patreon, patreon.com/RTK. That's patreon.com/RTK. You can pledge a little bit of money every month. It can be $5, $10, $20, or if you want to sponsor a show for either a product or a service, or maybe you want me to just sing your name. I will sing a song with your name in it for a certain amount of money. We'll have to figure out what that amount of money is. You can help support that show you can help support this show that way on patreon.com/RTK. Or if you direct message me on Twitter, I will give you an email address for a PayPal account, which is what Randy Singh did to help support the show that way. And you don't have to pay anything. You don't have to support the show at all if you don't want to. But if you want to support the show in a different way, you can get on iTunes and leave a review. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can share the show on Facebook and Twitter. You can like the show on Facebook, facebook.com/RTK show, and send questions and ideas through there. Follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/JB Briscoe. Just search Joshua Briscoe. I'll be there on the list. It's always great for me whenever you share the show with friends, family, Chiefs fans, doesn't matter who, especially through the offseason. The offseason can get awfully dark, especially also even during, you know, the Royals season. I love sports in general, but having a specific show for the Chiefs, either every week or every other week, I'm going to have to figure out if I need some space in the beginning of this school semester. We'll figure that out. But having consistent Chiefs coverage, I value whenever I see other people doing it. I hope you feel the same way about this podcast. So share it with your friends and let me know then, please, what you think about how this show is going. It's a different show in the off season. There aren't games to preview. There aren't games to review. I need your questions, your ideas, your suggestions. I am wide open to anything you want to throw at this show in my general direction. If you want to hear about a specific player, a breakdown on something that I haven't thought of or haven't touched on yet, now is the time to do it. This offseason, I'm going to have a lot of me talking without a whole lot of games to talk about. So I am always thrilled to hear your ideas, your questions, your suggestions. Facebook, Twitter. If you want to mail me a letter with your suggestions in it, please don't, because I don't want to give my address out to every single person on the internet. That'd be kind of weird. But as always, thank you for simply listening. I'm Joshua Briscoe. This has been Roughing the Kicker on Arrowhead Addict Radio. Bye, Mom!
Excuse me, sir, but could you drop the bass?